Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello, everybody. We begin today with five things to watch for in the new Middle East peace process. You know, Hillary Clinton was known for logging frequent flyer miles all over the world during her time as Secretary of State, right? Well, in his first few months at the State Department, John Kerry seems to be focusing his attention on two destinations, Israel and Palestine, announcing on Friday that both sides had agreed to at least negotiate about negotiations, sort of. Joining me to talk about what Kerry has been working on is Aaron David Miller, a vice president at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars and former U.S. Middle East negotiator. And in Foreign Policy magazine, he's got an article called Five Things to Watch For in the Peace Process. Aaron, welcome to WNYC. Thanks for doing this.
Brian, a pleasure to be here.
So not much is known about these talks about talks. We don't know much about commitments either side has made or what the U.S. has promised. Before we get to your five things to watch for, or any other terms of these discussions, do we?
Well, that's part of the mystery, and that mystery is unlike anything I've ever seen. I mean, we're for half a dozen secretaries of state and participated in most of the U.S. efforts between 1980 and the early 2000s to broker peace between the Arabs and the Israelis. I've never seen anything quite like this. There's a radio silence here that is remarkable. I tried to get my friend Saab Erekat, the chief Palestinian negotiator, on a conference call at the Wilson Center, and he wouldn't do it, which for Saab is quite remarkable. And you have almost no leaks coming out of the prime minister's office, which is in itself kind of astounding. So there's a respect and a discipline about this process on the part of the Israelis and the Palestinians. Now, what that means is another matter. Does that mean there's nothing there, or is there something to protect? And that's what we really don't know. Kerry clearly understands that getting them back to the table without a sustainable basis on which to keep them there is essentially a key to an empty room. If in fact there is no sustainable basis, he probably shouldn't have started, because we're going to end up worse off than we are now. If in fact there are terms of reference, or if in fact he has heard things, which I suspect is the case, from both Abbas and Netanyahu regarding commitments of issues of great importance, then I think maybe you have something. But right now, it looks like kabuki theater to me. And that's not a bad thing if, in the end, within the next 10 days, the negotiators are here and Kerry can actually announce a real basis for talks.
And listeners, if you have questions about the new Middle East peace process, you can give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. We're hearing how much is not known, but if it's knowable to anyone outside those three men in the room, as they would say in Albany, I guess they say it in Jerusalem and Ramallah too, the three men in this case being Kerry, Abbas, and Netanyahu, Aaron David Miller would know it, 212-433-9692. And along with the mystery, I guess we know at least one thing, that Israel has said it will release some Palestinian prisoners as part of the negotiations to get to the peace talks, kind of a precondition that the Palestinians had for talks. And I gather that these include some prisoners who have been held for decades, some who are considered murderers by Israelis for terrorist acts. So is this as meaningful as it's been reported to be in some circles? And is it politically risky within Israel?
I think, you know, out of the 100 that have been requested, if in fact 80 are released over a period, and I suppose this is going to be, no one really trusts one another here completely. This is going to be done in phases over time. And I think this is an issue that resonates deeply in Israeli society, in Palestinian society, and resonates negatively to a large extent in Israeli society, particularly if we're talking about releasing prisoners who, in fact, have been implicated in terror and violence. These are also Palestinians of Abbas's generation. And that's going to resonate even more personally with him. You know, Hamas gained greatly from its prisoner exchanges, as asymmetrical as they were. You remember for Gilad Shalit, there was a hugely asymmetrical trade, because every Palestinian that prisoner that is released, forget the honor and dignity issue, for every Palestinian prisoner that is released, you're talking about hundreds of potential individuals, family members, and friends. And that resonates in Palestinian society, and it is a critically important ideological and emotional issue for Palestinians. But it also has a negative impact on the other side, obviously, particularly among those who believe that, you know, lifetime sentences weren't long enough for some of these guys, given what they've done. So, yeah, that's a confidence builder, and that's why, having agreed to it, or agreed to a process to release, the Israelis really are under tremendous pressure to follow through, as is Abbas, I suspect, who will try to probably committed to the secretary that he would not take the Palestinian issue to the UN General Assembly. He wouldn't push the issue at the International Court of Justice, assuming that the Palestinians have a case to make and the court would actually hear it.
Those would be huge, right? I mean, if he's promising not to pursue, you're saying, statehood at the General Assembly, or bringing Israel up on war crimes at the International Criminal Court, that's what you're saying, right? If he's promising those things, those are huge, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, they buy time and space. No one is going to commit to these things forever, but you'll have 6 to 9 months, I suspect, to test the proposition that Israelis and Palestinians can not just negotiate with one another, but can actually invest in issues that are critically important for the resolution of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And there are five. All other issues are subordinated to these five. One is Jerusalem. A second is the borders of a putative Palestinian state. A third is refugees. A fourth is security. And a fifth, which the Israeli prime minister has added in a very obvious way, is Palestinian recognition of Israel as the nation state of the Jewish people. These five issues drive the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Now, it's almost unimaginable to me, because nobody ever lost money betting against Arab-Israeli peace, the odds of that this is going to work to actually create a conflict-ending agreement in which all of these issues are resolved, I think the chances of that are pretty slim. The question is whether or not on two of the critical issues, borders and security, these negotiations can produce a set of understandings and ultimately an agreement on the borders of the putative state of Palestine and security commitments and obligations that will have to accompany it. If that is in fact possible, and it's going to be tough, real tough, then you could even begin to imagine going on to deal with the so-called identity issues, Jerusalem, which is also a territorial issue, of course, and refugees. But this is really going to be, for John Kerry and his team, this is going to be a series of migraine headaches, feel like a series of migraine headaches and root canal operations. This is really going to involve an intensive effort, and an effort ultimately, Brian, in which the president of the United States, who does not own this process nearly as much as John Kerry does right now, is going to also have to become involved in an intimate and intensive way.
Our guest on WNYC is Aaron David Miller. You just heard him talk about root canal. You just heard him say nobody's ever lost money betting against Middle East peace, but John Kerry is taking that bet. Aaron David Miller, former U.S. Middle East peace negotiator, and in Foreign Policy magazine, he's got an article, Five Things to Watch For in the Peace Process, 212-433 WNYC. Rita in Manhattan, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to know, when you say about the borders, would that include relinquishing at least some of the West Bank settlements that are considered illegal by many people?
Aaron, you got the question?
If you're going to fix a border, which now does not exist, you're going to have to essentially decide which settlements the Israelis are going to demand that they retain and incorporate into Israel proper, and which they will not. And the proposition, at least among those who believe that a settlement is possible, is that 80% of those Israelis living beyond the 67 borders could probably be incorporated in X percent of the West Bank. Now, the X is what the Israelis and Palestinians have been negotiating for the last decade.
And these would be land swaps, in effect,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. At Camp David in July of 2000, with President Clinton, we joined this issue probably for the first time. And then the X factor was about 8 to 10%. That's what Barack put on former Prime Minister Ehud Barak put on the table, 8 to 10%. That December 2000, before Clinton left office, we were negotiating on the basis of 4 to 6%. The X was 4 to 6%. The Israelis would need roughly between 4 to 6% of West Bank territory, mm-hmm. which would allow them to incorporate those settlement blocks of critical importance. To whether you're a Labor government, a Kadima government, or Likud government, the control of the blocks essentially are going to be the same. That's going to leave a fair number of Israelis living in more removed and remote detached West Bank settlements. And there the question is compensation, return, but no annexation, certainly, of settlements. This whole proposition, I think, is probably one of the most extraordinary hurdles of any in the negotiations. It's a line, fortunately, they don't have to cross right now. The question is, can they agree, and this would be a historic achievement, on what the X is? Because if they could agree on what the X is, 100% of the West Bank minus X, mm-hmm. to deal with Israeli security and demographic needs, assuming the Israelis and Palestinians could agree to that, you could fix a border which would in fact be a huge breakthrough.
Let's take a call from an Israeli tourist visiting New York City, I am told. Here is Ronan in Queens. Ronan, do I have your name right?
Yes, actually, you pronounce it correctly.
Thank you very much. How do you happen to be listening to us today?
I love NPR. What do you mean? I listen to you guys all day long.
Oh, well, great. If you were from, Israel, you wouldn't necessarily know about the American radio stations, but I'm really glad. So what do you think listening to this conversation?
Okay. So I'm in Israel, right? I did my military service and everything, and I think I represent the majority of the people in Israel, which is, everybody knows that the final solution eventually is going to be two different countries, a Palestinian country next to an Israeli country. Any other solution is not a Zionist, it's against the Zionism. However, we feel upset, and I personally feel so much upset, and I know so many people in Israel, that only to gain the right to sit at the same table with the Palestinian, we have to free so many terrorists with blood on their hands. Every single terrorist that is free causes so much suffer to the family that lost a member. And in Israel, every single person, he knows or he has a relative or he has a member that lost a person in a terrorist act. So many people in Israel feeling like they are misled, or they feeling like they upset about gaining the right just to sit next to the same table that we have to free so many terrorists. Because this is, I think, the 10th or the 11th time that we're trying to negotiate. And based on past experience, I tell you the truth, we're not so positive.
Yes.
So I wonder why we have to free so many terrorists just to gain the right to sit at the same table.
Aaron, can you answer the question?
Well, that's a question clearly to be taken up with Prime Minister Netanyahu and the security cabinet and Shin Bet
But when he asks why, it must mean that that was a super high priority of the Palestinians.
We talked earlier about how the prisoner issue resonates, and yeah, it's front loading the process, and I understand the concerns on the Israeli side even before negotiations begin. As I mentioned, it's going to be phased, but it doesn't trivialize the degree to which the Israeli body politic is affected negatively by these prisoner swaps.
Ronan, let me ask you, what would Prime Minister Netanyahu have to show you to make you think it was worth it to swap these prisoners with blood on their hands, as you say?
Yes. The way Netanyahu articulates himself towards the population in Israel is that we feel that there's a lot of pressure from the American side, that, you know, Kerry is pushing both parties to sit at the same table. However, we're feeling that the Palestinian side doing it just to please the American, because mm-hmm. they take so much money from them, so they have no other choice.
Yes, pressure from the United States. Ronan, thank you so much for calling us. I really appreciate it. Now you can go home and say, how did I spend my summer vacation in New York City? Did I go to the Statue of Liberty? Did I go to the Empire State Building? No, I called a talk show and got into the Middle East crisis. So, Ronan, we really, really appreciate it. We just have a few minutes left. Then we have New York City Council Speaker and Mayoral Hopeful Christine Quinn standing by. Just a few minutes left with Aaron David Miller, Vice President at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars and former U.S. Middle East peace negotiator. In Foreign Policy magazine, he's got an article, Five Things to Watch For in the Peace Process. And they are, by the way, number one, are there written terms of reference or letters of assurance? I don't think we know that yet. Second to watch for, is there a negotiating text and maps? Two, he was talking about the potential maps, occupation minus X, or West Bank settlements minus X. Number three, will there be U.S. bridging proposals? He asks if Kerry is bringing a special envoy. Can he do this on himself? Will Obama get involved? As he asked, important to see, since the White House doesn't seem as invested as the State Department. And so just give me your answer to one of those, since I realize you're posing questions that you can't actually know the answer to.
Yeah, I'll give you the answer to the last one, the last paragraph.
Yeah.
Can Kerry succeed?
Yeah.
And the odds are against it. But if, in fact, he's going to, and I'll convey the most – I wish I had created this profound piece of philosophy, but I think it was Larry Summers, former – Secretary of the Treasury and former President of Harvard, who said, in the history of the world, Larry said, nobody ever washed a rental car. And the reason you don't wash rental cars is because it's part of the human condition. You care only about what you own. Right now, John Kerry owns this process in a way Benjamin Netanyahu and Mahmoud Abbas do not. And if it's going to succeed, the two of them, the Israelis and the Palestinians, really have to invest in a way they have not yet. If that is the case, if in fact driven by real prospects of gain and a greater confidence in one another, they develop some sense of partnership with one another, then Kerry will have something. If not, Brian, you and I are going to be having this conversation here at this time.
But this is the same conversation that people have been having for the last 25 years. So just tell me before you go, give me like 30 seconds on why now. It's not a particularly stable or peaceful time in the region, Syria, Egypt, etc. This has been a black hole for diplomats over so many years. So is this just something that Kerry feels so passionately about having to give a shot now that he's actually Secretary of State, or is there some other reason?
No, I think the reality is that this would not be happening without John Kerry. He is the glue that holds this together. Now, you could argue, I guess, that every other part of the Middle East is burning. Egypt's in perpetual dysfunction. Syria's in the middle of civil war. And Israel-Palestine is strangely quiet. Maybe there's an opportunity here. But again, to test that assumption means to determine whether or not Abbas and Netanyahu can find a real balance of interests. No different than good marriages, Brian, good business propositions, good friendships. Both sides have to get what they need.
Yeah.
And to the degree that Kerry can produce that, you know, he may actually get into the Secretary of State Hall of Fame.
Aaron David Miller in Foreign Policy Magazine. He's got the article, Five Things to Watch For in the Peace Process. We have a link to it on our site at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Aaron, thanks so much.
Pleasure, Brian. Take care.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Speaker Christine Quinn, next. Stay with us.